CVM Stories is produced by Exacaster.
Are in a country where 60% of people live under $2 per day. Unfortunately, that's true. So the people live on a daily basis. So when let's say a father don't go out, the children will not eat that day.
Welcome to CVM Stories, the podcast on customer value management. Together, we explore how companies can be more successful and the customers happier through the use of latest customer value management techniques. Learn key commercial and analytical insights from telecoms, retail, finance, and other industries that drive CVM forward.
Welcome to CVM Stories. I'm your host, Egidius. Today, our guest is Teri Avetimbi. Teri is a customer value management expert in Democratic Republic of Congo. He will share his insights and thoughts about customer value management, customer lifecycle management, retention, and many, many more topics. So let's dive in.
Subscribe to the podcast or sign up for an email newsletter at exacaster.com/CVM stories.
So Teri, thank you for joining us here.
Thank you for inviting me. Thanks a lot.
So, for the listeners who don't know you, Teri, could you describe what you do in Vodacom Congo? So what was your professional background in customer value management and analytics? I know that you have a very, very rich career.
Yeah, we can say that. Actually, I am in charge of loyalty and retention. So I am the loyalty manager. My role is just quite clear. I'm taking care of retaining customer as longer as I can, and as well as keep the customer loyal to us. So the role, I mean, it's a kind of very vast role. Actually, I'm driving loyalty initiatives, customer engagement as well, and some anti-churn activities as well. So I'm in charge of all the loyalty insight and retention initiatives, as well as all the projects coming from group. Maybe as you may know, Vodacom is part of a group. So we have this kind of transversal management. So I'm in charge of all loyalty initiatives coming from group as well.
So if I understand you correctly, you work in telco for over 15 years now. It's like, I don't know, you know everything.
Yeah. I've joined my first telco operator was Tigo, Millicom, a Millicom group company. I've joined as a data warehouse engineer. So I was in charge of like reading CDRs coming like from source tables to reporting. And that's where I get this numbering skills, you know, because I was the one who used to produce the report, the figures for the company. And then I was quite interested. I mean, I showed my interest to join commercial team. Then right, like six years after, I've joined the commercial as mobile internet product manager. At the time we were launching, we were launching 3G, yeah, at the time. So I was in charge of all data product portfolio. Remember at the time, the smartphone penetration was very low, and the data user penetration as well was very low. We have like 5 to 7% of data user on the overall customer base. So I've joined this the team, and I start like using the figures that I was producing for business that for taking the decision on the business side. And then since December 2016, I've joined Vodacom as in CVM, of course, as base management manager. And right now I'm in loyalty and retention like for 2 years and a half now.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that you started from the technical background,
yeah.
And you moved into the commercial role. So how do those technical skills help you to strive in the CVM area?
Yeah, you see, actually, CVM is more about data. It's more about knowing how to fetch data, how to use data, of course. And my technical background helped me a lot because I knew where to get this or that information and the like, you see. So when I'm talking with my technical supports, I know exactly what to say to them. And I can also anticipate the answer. I can tell me that, no, this kind of script or this kind of SQL request may take me like 2 days. I say, no, guy, please. I know what we are talking about. So one of the thing that I appreciate when I joined commercial is because I just came from technical, and it's kind of a plus for commercial, because you see telco is an industry, and we all learn on the ground. So that's kind of it yet.
Yeah, so you don't accept no from your technical team or from the IT team. It's like, guys, if you can't do it, I will write the query myself. Yeah.
You know, definitely, yes. I'm still running some query by myself because I have to. Yeah, if I'm in the rush, if I'm in the needs, I cannot wait for a BI or audit or else team to run it for me. That's one of the advantage that I have. But still, yes, I do accept no's because it's normal, but just that we are having a fair discussion, you see.
Yes.
It's worked like this.
Thierry, you are in Democratic Republic of Congo, yeah? So could you describe your market a bit for our listeners? Because I come from Lithuania, you know. Congo is quite far away. I don't know what are the challenges there.
Yeah, what I can say for DRC, it's a very big country, very, very big. It's actually the second largest country in Africa with over 2.3 million people. It's 2.3 million square kilometers. It's like 36 times Lithuania, actually. I did the calculation. 36 times Lithuania. And oh over God. 96 million people. Yeah, it's a very, 96. Very big country. 96 million, yeah. So it's a multicultural country. We have more like more than 200 ethnicities.
And okay.
And 200, I mean, like 200 languages. So it's kind of countries in a country. Yeah, it's a very, very big one. Yeah, but people are nice. We are, it's a really nice country.
I was just kind of, sorry for the tangent, but you say 200 different languages. It's like, how do you manage them in your CVM activities?
That's crazy. I mean, when I say 200 languages, it's like dialects. I don't know if I said it well, but we still have 4 main languages. I mean, in some regions, there is 1 main language, can say like Swahili is spoken in the eastern parts. But in the eastern parts, you have such kind of villages. And in those villages, people spoke different languages and dialects. That's quite a different. But still, we have 4 main languages, except French, which is our official language, and English as well for some people. But we have actually 4 main languages.
And do you incorporate all those 4 languages in your, let's say, loyalty activities? Like you run the campaigns with 4 languages, etc.?
Yes, so we incorporate all the 4. I mean, actually, we incorporate 6 languages, the 4 that I just said, plus French and English. So our CVN platform and the IN actually is set up for 6 languages, actually. So I can send a personalized message according to the region, according to the language that customers did is set up in this form, such kind of thing. Yeah.
Okay. So you have a huge country.
Yeah, very huge.
Almost 100 million people. It's really a huge market. What is the market structure in terms of, like, is it a prepaid dominant, postpaid dominant, etc.?
It's a prepaid dominant. Actually, it's, I can say, 99% prepaid. You see, we are in a country where 60% of people live under $2 per day. Unfortunately, that's the truth. So the people live on a daily basis. So when, let's say, a father don't go out, the children will not eat that day. So it's kind of a market where a customer usually buy what he really needs at the time, at the instant. So it's a 99 or 99.9% prepaid market. And you see with this higher unemployment rate, I think it's more than 80%. So it's clear that it should be a prepaid market.
Okay. So I assume that your competition is fierce, especially kind of from the pricing perspective, etc.
Yeah, yes, yes, of course. But we do have the regulation. So in kind of pricing, we have such kind of, let's say invoice, we have this low, this price that we cannot go below invoice, but the data not yet. So the voice is regulated. So our pricing is quite similar. But I think we are going to get into it further on in the discussion.
So how many competitors do you have in the market?
Actually, there are four operators. Vodacom is the leader with 39% market share, followed by Airtel is the second. And then we have Orange. Actually, Airtel previously was Zain. And previously, again, it was Celtel. So, yeah, and now it's Airtel. And then we also have Orange. Orange who acquires Tigo, the place that I was working previously. And we also have Africell. So those are the four operators. So Africell is the last one with, I think, 6% of market share.
Okay, so I will try to kind of reflect on what is your context that you're working in. It's a huge country, five different competitors. People are
four
competitors. People are definitely having multiple SIM cards.
Yep.
And they mainly purchase the products and services when they have a need and have some cash at hand. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
You have an extremely challenging situation. So how do you do retention and loyalty here?
we have tools. Of course, we have challenges, just as I say. The first one is like the low literacy rates. So what do we do in loyalty? First of all, the best one is to ensure the quality and to ensure, that we are giving value to the customer. So the customer is comfortable to pay for what he really needs. And then we are sure that we're giving the customer what he's paying for. And of course, in the multi-siming market, the challenges are different and are bigger because, let's say for the low-value customers, it's about the price. So we need to make sure that we are giving good price to customer, okay? And as well as for, let's say, for high-value customer is the experience and the customer services. What experience this customer is getting for us. How do I, responding to your question now, how do I drive loyalty and retention is first of all based on customer behavior, okay? I know that in some regions, customer acts or use different products than in other regions. So I just make sure that the customers are using as much as, I mean, let's say I'm just making sure that the customers stay longer than we can do.
So now going into this super challenging multi-SIM environment, when you try to cope with the churn, yes, so you probably try to understand the reasons of the churn. So is it kind of only the price here, or are there other reasons why do customers churn in your market?
Oh, there are many reasons. Just as I mentioned, for the price, it's like for our low-value customers. But you see, the customer decide to churn, I can say, when he feel like you are not providing what is waiting for you, you see. So what I can say about churn, first of all, it can start from acquisition. We have this, I mean, in Africa, I can say, we have this issue with on sales and distribution, I can say that. In this commission stuff, I don't know if you heard about it. So sometimes our street guys, because actually our main contributor, our main vendor are the guys from the street, actually. We sell with, from those guys. So if we need acquisition, massive acquisition, we need to use the activator from the street. So right now, unfortunately, we cannot manage the quality of acquisition. You can see, let's say you have, 100 new customers, but you are not sure that they are actually real customers. Still, we have tools. We are putting in place some systems, some tools to detect very very quickly or earlier. But we have this kind of customer or acquisition that just become churn after a few days. You see, so okay. It's kind of we just count them as new customers, but just right after, because our definition of churn is after 90 days of inactivity. So you see, you do have some customer just after 90 days they churn. So this we can like in my point of view, we can like work with sales and distribution guys to tackle it from the activator level.
So this is a super interesting part for me. So you, Thierry, are responsible for retention and loyalty, yes?
Yes.
And then there is the acquisition arm where you say, okay, we need to grow customer base. We hire those people who do activations in streets. And now you cause a churn problem for you. So how do you do the handshake with the acquisition team?
So you really got it. You really got it. Because in the end of the day, they're going to ask me, why do we have such this number, huge number of churn, you see? So what we do, just as I was saying, we are now working with the sales and distribution teams to try and put in place some kind of special commission for those activators bringing us good quality. You see, it's not that we are going to fire those guys with bad quality, no. So now we are making sure that this activator, this special activator, bring me like 80% of good quality customers. We have our KPIs that we can say that this is a very good new customer, actually. We put in place some KPIs. So at the time, we are, just as I say, putting in place this kind of special incentive, if I can say, for those one. And then it's the aim is to discourage all the activators to bring us like garbage. You know what they say, garbage in, garbage out.
Yeah.
So as we cannot like do campaign to those customers because we are not even reaching them, all we can say is to act on the activator level.
So this part is a very kind of structural churn for you, because it's like you know that you will cause this churn for yourself, so you're trying to fix it at the root cause where the sales channels are involved. And what about the other churn reasons? So let's say customers stayed with you for, let's say, I don't know, month, 2 or 3 months. They kind of were onboarded to your services. What are other challenges related to retention here?
I think the main challenge, according to a study, actually, it was this, let's say, my relatives and friends are not using your network. Let me explain why. Back at the time, on net price, when a Vodacom customer call Vodacom, it's cheaper. It's always cheaper. Even though right now we are doing this kind of bundle for calling all the network, but actually it's cheaper. If Vodacom wants to call Airtel, it's going to be higher than calling Vodacom. So what we found out is that customers has this kind of networking in among their correspondents. So they prefer to first call the same network instead of trying to call other networks, which is actually much expensive. So one of the reasons of customers actually switching, because you see, when we say churn, it's not only customer leaving telco services, it's mainly switching for another operator, actually. See? And according to a study, 25% of the customers switch from an operator to another one. It's like 25% of churn, actually. So one of the reasons it's because they just switched the provider, because just as I say, my network, my family don't use it. And also we have this price sensitive issue, because let's say if one operator change his product catalog, we fail it, you see? Let's say actually we sell $1 for 1 GB. If an operator decreases the price to, let's say, 80 cents, I tell you, we are going to see the decrease tomorrow.
Okay, wow.
because the customer have more than one SIM. They're going to move.
but how do you react in this situation in real time? It's like, I don't know, it's such a fast feedback.
Yeah, we need to react, actually. We do react, but you see, with the processors, with the validation, it may take time, but we do react because we have to. We are in a market where people are price sensitive, and especially for the low-value customers, they they will go where they feel like it's cheaper.
How much time does it take actually, for example, for you to react to the competition campaign? Because it sounds like you almost need to do this in real time.
First of all, I was talking about the open market, but in CVM we have this kind of process which is quicker. We don't need, because you see, the one of the advantages of CVM is we have this target group. We are not opening our special offer to the entire base. So it may take like normally it may take like 2 to 3 days. But once again, coming back to the technical issues, technical guys can be longer for implementing, can take over to 1 week, maybe 2 weeks. It depends on the complexity of the campaign. But actually, on average, it's 1 week maximum.
Okay, wow.
For CVM, yep.
Okay, this is a very, very fast-paced environment. It's like, wow. So this is a very kind of, in this really special environment, could you share some, let's say, retention scenarios that you saw working and that you can share? That would not be your commercial know-how, you know?
You see, retention, it's always a kind of I can say, like, dark room. And I'm not sure if I can say it performed well, but performed better. We just update our inactivity framework. I can say that instead of just waiting to customer to go silent, you see that this customer is not using my service for 3 to 4 days and then just send a campaign. That was what we used to do. But right now we integrate this AI and ML strategy. As I said previously, we are part of a group. So in all the Vodacom operations, do have support from group, which is our big data team with a bunch of data scientists. So so they support on this proactive approach on, you see, predicting whether a customer is likely to go silent like the next week, the next month. And that is something that is helping us very, very, very much, you see, because the reactive approach is not always the best one. But once again, we still have some challenges because of the offer communication. That's literacy rate that I say it's too low. I mean, the challenges is more on the customer side to understand what I'm trying to sell, what I'm trying to say, and when I need to send the offer. But in the features capabilities point of view, I mean, it's AI and ML, I can say. That is helping us too much.
So this is a very interesting point. So for example, okay, you are in a situation where, let's say, not the literacy rate, as you said, it's lowish, yeah? So what kind of channels then you use to communicate with the customer? Is it like, I don't know, IVR, or is it like live with people? How do you solve that?
We use SMS, actually, even though it's not the best one. And one of the strategy that we are now trying to go wide is the retail channel. You see, once again, back at the time, we did have a very low penetration of bounded users. I don't know about your market, but if you want to have good deals, you need to activate bundles, see?
Yes.
And we have this low penetration on bundles. But since few years, the market changed, and we start selling from the retail. So the customer just come to a POS, gave money, and the POS send him minutes or gigabytes, not just selling to him airtime, as was done before, because before we were selling airtime and the customer received airtime in his balance and then he need to activate the bundle. But right now, the POS send directly 5 minutes, 10 minutes, or let's say 10 gigabytes, the customer start using it. And I think it's a game changer, actually, it's in the marketplace. So yes, but the issue is how do we, as CVM or loyalty, use the retail channel as a channel, actually. That's an issue. I mean, there are projects, but still it's a kind of issue, actually.
So you are basically scaling your CVM know-how into the channels directly, you know? Because yeah, every channel employee becomes actually a CVM when they need to do the proper upsell or proper sales of the bundles. Let's move a bit now from the retention part to the broader customer lifecycle management. So how would you define what are the parts of customer lifecycle that needs to be overlooked by this role?
Customer life cycle management plays a crucial role. And from a telco perspective, I mean, one of my role is, as I said previously, to make sure that the customers stay longer. And from acquisition, just as I was saying, from acquisition, I need to make sure that the new customers I'm just acquire, I need to make sure that and maximizing its profits by giving value, of course. I think that the customer life cycles goes together with the product life cycle. I'm going to explain myself. Mm-hmm. When I acquire new customers, I need to make sure of which product is using. Because in the end of the day, my objective is to increase the customer lifetime value. And I know which products customers are using to stay longer with me. Okay? So that's why I was saying that it goes together with product life cycle. I need to know which products to put to these customers. For instance, for us, here is data, of course, is mobile data, and it's mobile money. This is something that I'm not sure that you guys had. I don't know if you are aware of mobile money, but
In Lithuania, we used to have a couple of mobile money products that, but they didn't pick up. I understand that in many markets, mobile money actually went through the roof.
Yeah.
So tell us more. How do you actually combine the data and mobile money part?
First of all, mobile money it's one of the main strategy of every opco, actually, because the banking rate is too low in DRC. Once again, it's around 5 to 6% of rates. Customer can like getting paid directly from his phone is something that is kind of genius. Since why? So while we are trying to push mobile money, with this mobile money, customer can as well buy products. And when a customer buys product using mobile money, I mean, we as a company, we don't pay any commission to the retailer or to the vendors. It's just us and the end user.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the reasons we are pushing mobile money, actually. So a customer we use mobile money is willing to stay with us longer because it's like using his number as banking accounts, if I can say it like this, roughly. And for data, it's, you know, when a customer is using data, it's the customer who is more engaged in the network, especially if your network is very good. So we all know that a data user is a customer which, like in African market, let's say DRC market, a data user is a customer who spend around 3 to 4 times more than a voice-only user.
Okay.
So those are like, yes, two key pillars of the opcos actually. I mean, the operators actually.
But so then when you are actually moving customers to, let's say, or onboarding customers to use mobile money, etc., how does this process look like? Because, you know, people need to train how to use it, etc.
One thing that we found out in another study that we acquire new customers, you have like 80% of chance that he has used a mobile operator before. So having a new customer doesn't mean that he's a new GSM customer. So 80% of our customers know what they want and know what they need. But still, we have this training team, as we say. Let's say for mobile money, we are using the activators once again, because when an activator brings us, as I say, good quality, we make sure that it trains these new customers. It tries to open a mobile money account to these customers, because he really needs IDs and so on. If he open this mobile money to the customers and the customers start using, the activator or the vendor will get commission. So that's what we put in place, as well as the onboarding, just as you say, which is in CVM parts, the onboarding process, such kind of education campaigns. Let's say a hey, you're a new customer. If you want this, just do that, and so on and so forth. Trying to get into bundles, trying to look at which region it is actually, and which good deal we have in that region. Remember, I told you DRC is country is in country. So the product that may work in my city is not the same that is used in another region, perhaps. For example. So we need to make sure in which region this customer is, what is the good deal that we are offering there, because we may be challenger in that region. Which device is using? Is he using data while he has a smartphone? You see, this kind of onboarding and indication campaigns that we are doing.
Okay. And you mentioned that you are actually thinking how to maximize customer lifetime value. So how do you use this KPI in your daily work? Do you actually calculate it somehow? Do you kind of measure the impact, etc.?
Actually, not really. Not really, because our customer base is not homogeneous. We cannot... Yes, it's going to be a very huge work to start calculating, because we have like 21 million customers and each group or each bracket of customer have their own behavior. So it's not like trying to calculate the CLTV value, but just making sure that according to the behavior, according to the region it is, according to the device it's using, we still have some acceptable KPIs let's say customer engagement KPI that we follow, and we really need to make sure that this customer is using those services as much as it should.
Your context is extremely challenging. It's like, you're going for an ultimate personalization. You know, you're working like in a country which has a very broad culture, many languages, many regions. Products
definitely
are mixed within the regions, not kind of different products available in different markets. And so... how do you do all of this? Is it like, how do you build a team which would run this? Because this is a huge, huge work. So how do you structure your CVM team?
Actually, the CVM structure is kind of basic. We have a loyalty and retention manager that I am. We do have base management, which is not a colleague. CVM based management manager. We do have private pricing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I will explain. We do have a private pricing, is the one who is in charge of hyper-personalization offers. You see, it's the one using AI and ML. We have actually a product that we call, a catalog, if I can say, that we call Just For You. So once you get into the portfolio, the offer that you will see is not the same that I will see if I get into this the same catalog.
Okay.
So, so there is a champion for that, and we also have a CVM for mobile money, for M-Pesa actually, for mobile money. So he's the one taking care of all the mobile money activities, and we also have one reporting, the one who is in charge of getting data and getting the target base, following the target criteria, and so on and so forth.
Okay, so you basically have all CVM function in one team, and then some extra BI analysts, helping you with the target base selection, etc. What are the other, functions with the team that you need to collaborate most closely, to achieve your business results? So I assume you have a good relationship with the data warehouse team because you can talk their language.
Yeah. But first, let me come back to the structure. We also do have a CVM team sitting in technical. So because we are in commercial, business side, is the one who taking care of the platform. With they make sure that the company. I mean, they're the one who launched the, actually go to the system and launch the campaign. So coming back to your question, we work very closely with the product team.
And what is the distinction? Let's say between what does the product team do and what do the customer value management team do? Because these are very coupled functions.
Yeah, very good one. Actually, the product team is in charge of what we call open markets products. So every customer will see these products once it goes to the menu, right? We have $1, 1 GB for everybody, except in some region, just as I said. But, but still, when you are in that region, you are going to see without no condition because you just belong to that region. Okay, but in CVM, we are quite targeted-based, I mean, targeted criteria. I cannot give to Egidius the same product that I will give to Thierry. No. So for you to have my BTL product, you need to respond to some criteria and you really need to be in my whitelist. So CVM for us, it's 100% BTL offers and product is ATL offers actually.
Okay. So product is responsible basically more for acquisition the customer of new new customers into the product, and then you do the optimization magic to make sure that you get as much value as possible. Okay,
exactly, that's it.
And and all the pricing decisions they happen basically under customer value management. Yes, like kind of how to I don't know. Tune the price for every person, or is it a separate function in an organization?
I can't say it's like a teamwork, if I can say that. I will explain myself. Actually, the role of CVM, as I said, I mean, at least for our CVM, is to make sure that the customer is getting value and using as much a service that he can. So, the CVM pricing is actually decided, let's say CVM offers, is decided into CVM, but validated to by product team. Because let's say we have this experience that we just had a few weeks ago. We had one BTL product for a specific region that was cannibalizing one offer, ATL offer. You see, so it was like an aggressive offer in a region that we are like the third in that region. We are challenger. So we as CVM, we open it for more customers that we could, that we should actually. And then product teams just saw their one of the main products start decreasing. So they literally saw a kind of changed, so it was a reversal. So the guys come, they say, guys, you should stop this one. We said, but this is a BTL offer. Actually, we do. It's our main offer. It's our like the best one that we have. And then we agreed to stop the BTL one, the CVM offer, to go with the ATL because actually ATL is our portfolio, our main catalog. So just to say that some of our products, if they are too aggressive, they are starting to cannibalize the ATL offers. So we really need to have a teamwork to decide which offer, which pricing to give to which customers.
This is a very funny example that you gave because theoretically the example is like, you know, the ATL offer was so good that it cannibalized all my current customer base. And that now you go, I give a BTL offer that cannibalized ATL, you know.
Exactly. You see, in the end of the day, we do have some KPI to achieve as our CVM. So sometimes we just don't go on the ground, but you see, still it's we need to get aligned. Yeah, it's essential.
Okay. So your market is super challenging, and when you look into the future of this market, so what are the key trends and innovations that you see are happening here? So you mentioned a couple of them. What are the next things that you see?
I think the trend actually is on, I'd say, mobile data adoption. In the beginning, I just mentioned that we used to have this kind of like 6 to 7% of data users. Now, on the overall market, we reach, I think, 30% of data users in the market. Mobile technology is going really, really fast. And even though we are in this market which is on development, if I can say that, but people are adopting data very faster. Maybe because, I think it's surely because of the smartphone price that is getting cheaper. That's something that we didn't have back at the time. But, I mean, once a customer switch for a feature phone to a smartphone directly, you see a change of behavior. So, from my opinion, I think one of the driver of growth, if I can say, in the marketplace, it's going to be mobile internet. When I say mobile internet, of course, is driven by social network. We have young people in our country. So actually, it's when they're stuck on the phone, they just don't give up. Yes, it is. It is. It's actually mobile data. Mm-hmm.
But is it so that the social networks and this mobile data, etc., it should also help to increase both the literacy rates, etc. Because if you want to be on, social media, TikTok or WhatsApp, etc., you actually need to uplift your skills as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a very good point. I will give you an example. A mother of my friends, she actually cannot read, as I said, but she's a huge WhatsApp user. I will say, I will make you laugh. My friend just traveled, and I got to visit his mother, and I just found out that what she was using is sending voice notes. She's actually a data user, but she only sends voice notes. She just knows how to open his phone, go to WhatsApp, select the name of the correspondent, and start talking, and then listening, talking, listening, talking, listening. You see, this is kind of crazy, but that's literally all she does on digital wise, you see, and I'm sure that you have those category of people, of course, who are curious, who want to learn using internet because actually it's still a device, and you also have this young generation coming, which are very good literacy rates, which are trying to change things using internet. So it is.
Yeah. You're living in a very, very interesting phase. It's like everything is growing, booming, and you see how it actually changes.
Yeah, exactly.
So to start wrapping up our conversation, we have three killer questions, for all our guests. So question number one is always about, could you share, let's say, your proudest moment of your career? Maybe some campaign happened better, even better than you expected, or I don't know. What would be, let's say, your highlight from the CVM area?
I will start from my career first, and then I will respond to the CVM. Yeah, for the first one, it's switching from technical to commercial. Yes, I think I cannot imagine that I would be able to make it, but I did, of course, with the support of colleagues. So that switch was like I was st- Still now, I'm very proud of me because having a technical background, finishing IT background, so you see now I'm commercial. It's very something that I'm proud of. And on CVM perspective is, I just mentioned just for you. Actually, it's not a product that I'm running or that I'm driving. It's Coex, but I was kind of support for the project. Just for you, it's this hyper-personalization offer catalog that we do have. It was the first, I can say, the first offer portfolio using AI and ML. So we went through challenges and challenges. We were proposing wrong offers to wrong customer at the beginning. And then as we are moving forward, we start seeing results. So I can say I'm still proud of being part of this this journey of launching for the first time in DRC a product based on AI and ML.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Despite of the challenges. Yes, despite of the challenges. And I think it's very good. For my side, I mean, this will be the third one. For my side is a campaign that we still run right now. This one I own.
Yes.
It's a non-data user campaign. Yeah. So we, just as I say, we have only 31% of our customer using data. So we fight every day to acquire more data. What we can find something where in DRC as well is you have customer owning a smartphone, making call but not using data. You see, so we are targeting those customer with very good offers, and the result is good. The result is very good because sometimes when the campaign doesn't work. On the month end meeting, we can see that why do we have this decrease on data users? The CVM campaign did not work for this or that reason. So it's kind of key campaign for us, actually.
Okay.
And I'm really proud of it.
It really sounds very inspiring because, like, yeah, and your career change and kind of the impact that you're doing, it's amazing. We also like to ask what didn't go so well, you know? did you have any failures, you know? Kind of, I don't know, sending the wrong message to all base type of thing.
You got it. You got it. I mean, every CVM manager, I'm sure, I think, as this kind of failure. Actually, back at the time, like 4 to 5 years ago, we signed the wrong CVM campaign to the wrong base and to the wrong person. When I said the wrong person, actually, it was my CCO at the time.
Oh, no.
So, yeah, so it was like all the CVM campaigns was starting to get, guys, what are you doing? Are you sure that or your CVM campaign it's worth it, you see, and that was a bad experience. But still, sometimes we need to go through those kind of experience to learn. I mean, to experiment and learn fast. You see, this is one of my big failures in CVM. And
what did you learn from that failure? No, it's like because failing it's natural. It's what do you take out of that?
Yeah, I think the takeout here is CVM should not like work on their own words. I will explain myself. Propose great deals, good offers, but it's still necessary or important to get feedback or to get a point of view from someone else. You see, and as the mitigation plan, what we had is now just as I said, we have this validation from product team, and we put in place an additional process. So every targeted base needs to be validated by the billing and integrity team. You see, now we are not only CVM, but we have CVM, offer design and proposition, product team with feedback and maybe like validation as well, and then billing and integrity team to make sure that we are targeting the right customer with the right offer.
So your failure integrated the company way better, and now it's like everything is better, you know?
if I can say that, definitely.
Okay.
Definitely.
And I have the last question for you. So imagine that there are people who are thinking about customer value management role, and they are searching for information, where to start, where to learn from, etc. Could you recommend any source, like a book, a podcast, people to learn from?
Yeah, podcast. This one, CVM Stories. First one. Yeah. I'm telling the truth. Yes. Podcast CVM Stories. And another podcast, which is Let's Talk Loyalty, for those who want to learn, to get experience to loyalty. There is a very good podcast named Let's Talk Loyalty. And unfortunately, you see, actually, we don't learn CVM at school. At least for DRC, we don't have any course of CVM. I know it's part of marketing courses, but we don't have like books or special course in university dedicated for CVM. It's just that you go into the industry and then you start taking data and trying to understand data and sending offers, unfortunately. So, but the podcast is CVM Stories, actually.
This is what we actually learned as well, because it's like customer value management is not like a proper discipline, you know? It's like people struggle to learn, and it's such an important role in the organization.
Yeah.
So, thank you, Thierry. It was a pleasure to have you here. It was very interesting. It's like very refreshing.
No, thanks to you. Thanks to you, Egidius. It was very nice to have you.
Thank you for listening to CVM Stories. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a review. You can also ask us a question about a particular customer value management challenge you have at work. We will happily ask our experts to tackle your challenge in a future episode.